This is a podcast from the BBC. For more information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts.
Well, it was really heaven, you see, for any idiot soldier. When you got this marvellous bed, a clean sheet, and you have no mud, you're getting rations, you're getting fed, you're getting washed. It was wonderful. And sleep at night without any shelling. Extraordinary, the feeling.
Donald Price, corporal in the Royal Fusiliers. The marvellous bed was a hospital bed, and heaven was lying injured after being hit by shrapnel near Polygon Wood during the Third Battle of Ypres. He'd hoped it was a blighty wound, bad enough to get him sent home and out of the appalling conditions facing British soldiers in the autumn of 1917.
I did everything possible I could, to get back home, but...
What do you mean by everything possible?
Well, told all kinds of stories, how it hurt and all that kind of, trying to pull the doctor's leg, I wasn't very old and, wanted to get home for a rest, but no.
What was the attitude of the doctor? Was he sympathetic?
Just ignore you. They'd probably seen so many like me. The orders for those officers in those days, get them back up the line, we're short of men, and don't send them to England if you possibly can. And that's what happened. If a fellow was reasonably good, if he was going to get better in a month, keep him.
When I got wounded, I said, thank God for that. I should be out of it now, because I know it's going to get worse there.
Gunner William Towers sustained a wound on the 1st of October, which was enough to get him back home. He spoke to Peter Hart, oral historian at the Imperial War Museums, in 1989, when he was aged 93.
I was all right. Thank God now, it's not too bad, and I'll be home soon. I'll be out of it. It was a joy, actually.
Out of it. It says a lot about the Western Front. The best-case scenario was getting seriously wounded. William Towers thought he'd received the perfect blighty wound, grave but not life-threatening. He was guiding pack horses carrying shells up the line to the gun batteries during daylight hours when a German shell landed right beside him. Shrapnel went into his kneecap.
And that was it. All when I remember going up in air and landing on floor, my legs stiff out. Never saw a horse, never looked for horses, and there was a shell hole and I rolled down that out road. Stopped there.
Were you in pain?
No, numb, actually.
Did you realise you'd been seriously
wounded? Yes, I could see it. My leg was stiff, and I'd been riding a horse, and shrapnel had gone right in the kneecap. But you were looking to see if there's anybody to help you. And all of a sudden, these two men appeared from nowhere. I said, "Darling, what's up?" And I showed him, he got a bottle of iodine, and he temmed in the hole. Oh, God, pain was terrific. They ran some bandaging round and put me on a stretcher. But what they did, they lifted me up on the shoulder and I was covered in them. I said, oh, for God's sake, put me down. No, you're all right, you'll be all right.
He'd been found, rescued. He was going home. No longer did he need to fear death in the moonscape of no man's land. But nevertheless, terrible challenges lay ahead for a soldier wounded in 1917. Recovery was not a certainty. Hospital was fraught with dangers, and even if he did recover, there was no welfare state, no safety net. This programme is devoted to the remarkable story of William Towers' journey home and back to health, which required resilience, love, and luck. The first stage of his passage through the smashed fields of Flanders was astonishing enough.
So off we went, but I couldn't see where they were going. It was open, barren land, and all of a sudden they stopped, put the stretcher down. I said, what's up, aren't you going? He said, you're all right, don't worry. And they went and cleared some stuff away off there, and there was a trap door. They lifted it up, and it was a slide. They put a stretcher on, fastened the rope and lowered it down to somebody underneath. It was a proper hospital underneath. It had been a German hospital underground.
And whereabouts exactly was this?
Passchendaele. There was a full staff of hospital people there that took me down into a theatre, and I always remember that giving you anaesthetic. It was terrible. They had a white mask like that fit on your face. They pressed it on, and when that drop went, you fought, you know, fighting, and she held me down like that. You're all right, stop it. And next news, I woke up and I was on the train.
He was now on the train to Etaples, an enormous military camp with 20 hospitals. Safe at last, you might think, but this was 1917. Military medicine could still be terribly primitive.
Two big marquees into one, and it was all duck boards, and when he got out of bed, it was a duck board. And they put me in a bed. Oh, and the pain from my knee was getting terrible. And we're watching down...
That was the only wound you'd got? I mean,
yes, that was
shattered kneecap?
Yes, that was it. And I was looking down this marquee, and there was an officer coming up with two sisters, and he had his arm round her, laughing and talking. And I thought, well, if that's an inspection, they didn't inspect him, but she came right through one, never said aught to anybody, coming past me. So I just said, excuse me, sir. He says, what? I said, could you have a look at my knee? It's driving me crazy, the pain. Right, so they took bandages off, and he says, oh, there's a fluid there.
Just above the
yes,
knee?
Yes, just above the knee. He says, we'll tap that tonight. The fluid, we'll get the fluid, we'll tap it. So, right, they came for me to go to the theatre. I thought, oh, thank God for that. I woke up at early hours at morning. I said, what's the matter here? My hand dropped off. I thought, oh, my God, my leg's gone. They're taking it off, guillotined it off. Never said a word. I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do now?
Was there no hint at all that you were going to lose your leg?
No.
Had you ever thought you'd lose
your leg? No, never thought in the wild world. He said he'd tap it, fluid. When he said tap it, that means he's going to draw the fluid off.
Had they given you any idea?
Never said a word. They just took me into the theatre, gave me anaesthetic, and that was it.
Did they say that you'd get better?
Never told. That was the only time I saw a doctor. And if I never asked for him, he wouldn't have called. They were just walking past us with his arms around his two sisters, laughing and joking.
No.
And do you know, I've never smelt a man smelt more like a distillery in my life. He stank of whiskey. They'd been drinking. And I woke up next morning when this hand went over. I'll never forget that day. I prayed to die. What a shock. They guillotined them. Do you know how they do that? They just cut all the flesh round, then saw through the bone and put some gauze on them, leave it.
You'd lost your leg and you hadn't been expecting it.
No.
And you said you wished you were dead, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Is that what you really felt? I mean,
yes.
Do you remember what went through your head a bit more? I know it's horrible.
Yes. All I could think of was men stood at street corner on one crutch with a tin can, begging. And I thought, oh, my God. And I was a footballer. My football career had finished and that. And it was terrible. And
would you rather taken the risk then of being killed?
Yes, I would. I thought at the time I'd rather have been killed.
About over the channel back to Britain. Another train, heading north.
I don't know where we landed, but it was night and they put us in a train and off. Next news, I'm in Stockport Hospital.
Is this just a normal general hospital?
It was a workhouse at one time and being converted into hospital. And there was a doctor there, a civilian doctor, Mr. Fenwick. And he came to look at me when he took bandages. Oh, the stench was terrible. And the flesh had receded and a 2-inch of bone stuck out. And it had gone black. Oh, he says, now the young man, he says, where do you live? I told him, Leeds. He says, send a telegram for his mother and father to come right away. My wife there, she came. I'd met her while I was home and that. Last 2 days when I was home.
On leave?
On leave and met her. And she kept going to that mother's house and inquiring about me and all like that. And she came with them and we sprung a friendship up from that. I think it was her that pulled me round with her coming.
When did you start to feel a bit better then? Your girlfriend?
When I got under this civilian doctor. Because he took an interest in me and he was sorry for the trouble I'd been through. And he said, I'll put in a complaint in William He said, they won't get away with it.
It sounds like your life was in danger.
It was, because they thought I was going to die. But I felt a little happier now, because somebody was taking an interest. Nobody was interested. They wanted you to die, I think.
Away from the danger of the Western Front, the doctor arranged for William Towers' knee to be re-amputated by a friend who was a surgeon, on leave over the Christmas holiday, 1917.
And he used to come on the morning with a mirror. Now then, that's looking nice, isn't it? Yes, it's getting better. Oh, he says, we're going to win, William Higgins. We're going to win. That man was an angel, I said, nice to find. It had to be re-amped, you see, that bone cut back and flesh sewn over. And they came. And the theatre was closed for holidays. And they got a staff in, and they got, and he spent, I don't know how many hours on it. They come for me, took me down.
On his leave?
Yes, on his leave, and did it. And, you know, it was perfect. And, you know, everybody had seen that, said, what a beautiful job that this man's done on that.
In the spring of 1918, Towers moved to a convalescent home, a converted private house near Knutsford, Cheshire, along with eight other recovering soldiers. He was now moving around on crutches.
It's the most marvellous place. It was like being in heaven. And there's a lovely lawn outside for us to go sit on. And then they bought us a croquet set. And I got pretty nimble then. So I were hopping round with croquet, two of us playing. And it got too droll, so we started playing hockey. Banging. And we both lashed out. And both sticks crossed like that, and one hammerhead flew off. Oh, God, we sat down and laughed. Uncle asked, then we got up, he said, what are we going to do? I said, look, I'm going up to see Maitre and that, what, Lady Peel. So we went up, and I said, now then, what do you want? I said, well, we've come, first of all, to apologise. And I said, we broke this stick, so will you get it repaired? And well, I'll pay for it. She says, you won't pay for it. She says, do you know, I enjoyed every minute out of watching you. So that was the sort of things we had. She thought we were hilarious, those playmen. Well, we were sort of getting fit.
It sounds like you were beginning to get a bit of you.
I was beginning to become natural now. No.
Was the depression going away altogether, or would it come back?
Oh, well, I'd forgotten the depression. I was now reconciled to this.
After the war, William Towers would become a tireless campaigner for servicemen who had lost limbs, fighting for better conditions for them for the rest of his life.
Them's the same crutches, 1917.
What, the ones you've got here?
Yes.
You've kept them all this time?
All the time. They've only been painted. They're lighter than them other things and that.
So these are the ones where you support yourself?
On your hands and shoulders. They're the lead.
Under
leather.
Your arm?
Yes, under your arm. But you can put weight on and relieve your hands. Or vice versa. Oh, they're lovely, them. I wouldn't part with them.